CD 4.
The barges stopped at some of the towns. By tradition, only the men went ashore, and only Amshat, wearing his ceremonial lying hat, spoke to non-Zoons. Esk usually went with him. He tried hinting that she should obey the unwritten rule of Zoon life and stay afloat, but a hint was to Esk what a mosquito bite was to the average rhino, because she was already learning that if you ignore the rules, people will, half the time, quietly rewrite them so that they don't apply to you. Anyway, it seemed to Amshat that when Esk was with him, he always got a very good price. There was something about a small child squinting determinedly at them from behind his legs that made even market-hardened merchants hastily conclude their business. In fact, it began to worry him when a market broker in the walled town of Zemphis offered him a bag of ultramarines in exchange for 100 fleeces. A voice from the level of his pocket said, "They're not ultramarines."
"Listen to the child," said the broker, grinning.
Amshat solemnly held one of the stones to his eyes. "I am listening," he said. "And they do indeed look like ultramarines. They have the gilt and shimmy." Esk shook her head.
"They're just sparkles," she said.
She said it without thinking and regretted it immediately as both men turned to stare at her. Amshat turned the stone over in his palm, putting the chameleon spiracle stones into a box with some real gems so that they appeared to change their hue was a traditional trick. But these had a true inner blue fire. He looked up sharply at the broker. Amshat had been finely trained in the art of the lie. He recognised the subtle signs now he came to think about it.
"There seems to be a doubt," he said. "But it's easily resolved. We need only take them to the assayer in Pine Street, because the world knows that spiracles will dissolve in hypactic fluid, yes, no?"
The broker hesitated. Amshat had changed position slightly, and the set of his muscles suggested that any sudden movement on the broker's part would see him flat in the dust. And that damned child was squinting at him as though she could see through to the back of his mind. His nerve broke.
"I regret this unfortunate dispute," he said. "I had accepted the stones as ultramarines in good faith, but rather than cause disharmony between us, I will ask you to accept them as a gift, and for the fleeces, may I offer this roseate of the first sorting?"
He took a small red stone from a tiny velvet pouch. Amshat hardly looked at it, but without taking his eyes off the man, passed it down to Esk. She nodded. When the merchant had hurried off, Amshat took Esk's hand and half-dragged her to the assayer's stall, which was little more than a niche in the wall. The old man took the smallest of the blue stones, listened to Amshat's hurried explanation, poured out a saucerful of hypactic fluid, and dropped the stone in. It frothed into nothingness.
"Very interesting," he said.
He took another stone in a tweezer and examined it under the glass.
"These are indeed spiracles, but remarkably fine specimens in their own right," he concluded. "They are by no means worthless, and I, for example, would be prepared to offer you... Is there something wrong with that little girl's eyes?"
Amshat nudged Esk, who stopped trying out another look.
"I would offer you, shall we say, 2 zats of silver?"
"Shall we say 5? Said Amshat pleasantly.
"And I would like to keep one of the stones," said Esk.
The old man threw up his hands.
"But they're mere curios," he said. "Of value only to a collector."
"A collector may yet sell them to an unsuspecting purchaser, as finest roseates or ultramarines," said Amshat, "especially if he was the only assayer in town."
The assayer grumbled a bit at this, but at last they settled on 3 zats, and one of the spiders